Hi everyone, I'm Bryce Kellogg from the University of Washington and Jiva Wireless. And today I'm gonna be talking to you about passive Wi-Fi. So one of the biggest benefits of Wi-Fi these days is its ubiquity. Wi-Fi is everywhere. We have it in our homes, we have it in our offices, and because it's so ubiquitous, lots of devices already speak Wi-Fi. In fact, there are billions of Wi-Fi devices being used today. But if Wi-Fi is so great, what's the problem? The problem is power. Wi-Fi transmissions are extremely power-consuming. When we look at the space of devices that today benefit from Wi-Fi's ubiquitous connectivity, PC and mobile make up the biggest components. But even mobile has problems. Your smartwatch, for example, if it were to use Wi-Fi, would die very quickly. And IoT is completely can't even use Wi-Fi because it is too power-consuming. And so with passive Wi-Fi, I'm going to show how we can take advantage of this ubiquity and create Wi-Fi transmissions at 10,000 times lower power than traditional Wi-Fi, and even 1,000 times lower power than BLE and Zigbee. So before I tell you how we can do this, let's first talk about why Wi-Fi is so power-consuming. So traditional Wi-Fi radios have two parts, a digital baseband processor and an analog RF front end. And so over the years, the digital baseband has scaled with Moore's law and consumes on the order of tens of microwatts of power. The RF analog, on the other hand, hasn't seen the same scaling and can consume hundreds of milliwatts of power. And so this means that a Wi-Fi transmitter can consume between 500 and 700 milliwatts. So let's look at an example Wi-Fi device, a smartwatch. Normally, every Wi-Fi device would have both the power-hungry analog RF front end and the efficient baseband processor. So our idea is to use only the digital baseband. So all of these devices, like your phone, your smartwatch, your IoT device, are only going to perform digital operations, making them extremely low power. The RF analog front end, the power hungry part, is going to be delegated to a single custom plugged-in device. And so the key insight of passive Wi-Fi is to use reflections to create Wi-Fi packets. So the plugged-in device generates an RF sine wave in the 2.4 gigahertz band, which is selectively reflected or absorbed by the passive device. And this will create Wi-Fi packets that can be decoded on any off-the-shelf Wi-Fi receiver, your smartphone, your laptop, your router, anything like that. And using this technique, we can get all data rates of 802.11b, 1, 2, 5.5, and 11 megabits per second, for between 15 and 60 microwatts of power, compared to the hundreds of milliwatts we saw with regular Wi-Fi. So here are our contributions. We create the first 802.11b transmissions using only reflections. We design a passive Wi-Fi network stack that allows our devices to coexist with regular Wi-Fi networks and Wi-Fi devices. And then we built an FPGA prototype to evaluate our system in various scenarios, and then also designed an IC to test power consumption. Okay, so let's go into more detail about how passive Wi-Fi works. First, I'm gonna talk about how we actually generate Wi-Fi packets using only reflections. Then I'll go into how we can decode these packets on any regular Wi-Fi receiver. And then finally, I'll talk about how we design a network stack to make sure that we don't step on each other's toes and coexist with regular Wi-Fi networks. Okay, so let's start with the first one. So the challenge here is that we don't have the same capabilities as a regular Wi-Fi radio. So to understand this, let me first tell you how we create reflections using backscatter. So backscatter is essentially an antenna connected to a switch. And if we have an RF signal coming in, incident on the antenna, if the switch is open, it absorbs all the energy. And if the switch is closed, it reflects the energy. So if we modulate the switch with a square wave, what we get on the output is a square wave on air. So this means that we're limited to only a square wave, which is pretty limiting. So if we contrast this with regular Wi-Fi radios, they've got a power-hungry DAC feeding into another power-hungry RF front end, and using this, you can generate arbitrary signals, and that's how Wi-Fi traditionally works. So the question becomes, how do we create 802.11b transmissions when we're limited to just this square wave and don't have a DAC? So our solution is to leverage the signal structure of 802.11b transmissions. So 802.11b has four data rates, 1, 2, 5.5, and 11 megabits per second. It uses DSSS encoding on top of DBPSK and DQPSK, so phase shift keying. And the thing to notice here is that packet generation and DSSS encoding are binary operations. They can be done in the digital domain. So what we need to do is we need to be able to create this, the phase shifts for BPSK and QPSK using only square waves. So phase shifts of 0, 90, 180, and 270. We do this just by time shifting that square wave that I talked about before. So we'll say that that square wave we saw before was 0 degrees. And if we want a 90 degree phase shift, we're just going to delay by 1/4 of a clock cycle. And then similarly for 180 and 270, we're going to delay by half a clock cycle and 3/4 of a clock cycle. And so in this way, we can get all four phases we need for DQPSK, and then by extension, DBPSK, and generate 802.11b packets. Okay, so now we can generate Wi-Fi packets. A regular Wi-Fi receiver should be able to decode these easily, but it's not actually that straightforward. So the challenge is that our plugged-in device that is generating the continuous wave creates strong interference. So if we look at the 2.4 gigahertz ISM band, there are three non-overlapping channels, 1, 6, and 11. You should only use those channels. And our plugged-in device, if it's generating a strong continuous wave for us to backscatter, say in channel 6, we use the method I just described, and we get a Wi-Fi packet, also in channel 6. The problem here is you see our continuous wave is much, much stronger than our Wi-Fi packet, and it's going to completely drown out any of our data. So our approach with passive Wi-Fi is to utilize the fact that Wi-Fi radios filter out-of-band interference in the same way they reject Wi-Fi packets on other Wi-Fi channels. So we first set our plugged-in device to transmit outside of the channel we care about. And then we create a frequency shift using a technique called subcarrier modulation. And we use that to encode the DBPSK and DQPSK information. If you want more information about subcarrier modulation, you can look in our paper and we go through all the math and about how that works. But it comes down to it shifts the Wi-Fi packets away from the strong interference. And you can see that we actually create two copies here, one plus delta F and one minus delta F. This is due to the fact that we're doing subcarrier modulation. And it points to that we're getting sort of a trade-off between bandwidth and power efficiency. And at 10,000x, we think it's a pretty good trade. If you disagree, we have another paper coming out in SIGCOM this year where we show how we can completely get rid of one of those mirror copies. Okay, so far I've talked about the physical layer, but Wi-Fi is a shared medium. What about the link layer? How do we coexist with other Wi-Fi devices? So here's a sort of general view of an example Wi-Fi network. We have a single plugged-in device, that thing in the middle. It's providing an RF signal. We have various passive Wi-Fi devices talking to routers or smartphones. And then we have other regular Wi-Fi traffic, like your phone, checking Facebook, watching Netflix, whatever. So to make all these coexist, let me first remind you how traditional Wi-Fi does it. So in traditional Wi-Fi, you first perform carrier sense, transmit if no one is talking, and then listen for an ACK. It's pretty easy. The problem here is that receive operations are extremely power hungry using a traditional Wi-Fi receiver. So we have to do this a different way if we want to get all those power benefits. So our solution with passive Wi-Fi is to delegate the power-hungry MAC to the plugged-in device. So to perform a transmission, the plugged-in device first performs carrier sense. If no one is talking, it sends a signaling packet to our passive device, and this signaling packet is encoded in on-off keying, which you can decode in an extremely low-power fashion. The passive device hears the signaling packet. The plugged-in device turns on its continuous wave. The passive device backscatters a Wi-Fi packet. It's received at our Wi-Fi receiver. Our Wi-Fi receiver sends an ACK, and that's received at the plugged-in device, which has a regular Wi-Fi radio. And then it will forward the ACK information on the next signaling packet to the passive device. So in this way, we share the medium with regular Wi-Fi traffic, even non-Wi-Fi 2.4 gigahertz traffic, and don't cause any problems.
Well, the colors are weird.
Okay. So, and that's passive Wi-Fi. So we prototyped our baseband processor on an Altera Cyclone 2 FPGA dev kit. And we used a custom board for the backscatter switch connected to just a regular Wi-Fi antenna. Using this platform, we evaluated our system in various scenarios that I'll talk about in a sec. And then we also designed an IC in the TSMC 65 nanometer LP process to calculate power numbers, and that's how we got the 15 to 60 microwatts that I mentioned earlier. Okay, so the first thing we evaluated was the operational range of passive Wi-Fi in various scenarios. And I'm going to talk about one here, but you can find all the others in our paper, as well as a theoretical analysis of the range. So what we set our passive device and our plugged-in device a set distance apart, call that D1, and then we took our receiver, this was a regular unmodified HTC One smartphone, and moved it various distances from the two. Okay, so here are the results. On the x-axis, we have the distance between the passive device and our smartphone receiver, and on the y-axis is received signal strength. Okay, so first, the plugged-in device and the passive device are 12 feet apart, and you can see the RSSI goes down as we get further away. That's to be expected, and it gets to about 55 feet before it cuts out and we don't get any more packets. If we move the passive device and the plugged-in device closer together, this time to 6 feet, you can see we extend our range to 100 feet, we get better RSSI. If we move them even closer to 3 feet, we get even better RSSI. The reason we're limited to 100 feet here is that we did these experiments in the UW CSE atrium, and that's actually only 100 feet long. So we actually ran out of space when I started moving into the elevators. Okay, so you'll remember I mentioned that regular Wi-Fi receivers can filter out out-of-band interference like our RF sine wave. How well they can do this depends on how close the interference is to the Wi-Fi channel we're receiving on. So here we evaluate the packet error rate of a 1 megabit per second transmission at various frequency shifts of our continuous wave. So first, we tried 12.375 megahertz. You can see it's pretty high packet error rate and it's pretty unstable. We get some big peaks, probably due to multipath. So there's a lot of interference happening right there. So if we move our continuous wave further away from our Wi-Fi channel, this time to 16.5 megahertz, you can see significantly less packet error rate, much more stable, less multipath effects. And then if we bump it up to 44 megahertz really far away, It's very good. And at this point, we're bordering on the packet error rate of regular Wi-Fi 1 megabit per second transmissions. Okay, so to conclude, we introduced passive Wi-Fi to transmit actual Wi-Fi packets at 10,000 times lower power than traditional Wi-Fi using only reflections. These Wi-Fi packets can be decoded on any unmodified off-the-shelf Wi-Fi receiver, and we believe that passive Wi-Fi can enable connectivity for the next billion Wi-Fi devices where power is expected to be a major concern. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Yue Qiao from Ohio State University. I have a question about the power supply of your IC implementation.
Yeah.
So does it solely rely on the harvested power, or you have extra power?
Yeah, no. So we're not, in this work, we didn't do any power harvesting. We've done power harvesting work before. Uh-huh. Our thought is that focus on the communication, get it down to 15 microwatts, you know, such small power that it enables you to work on the low power that you get from harvesting RF.
Okay, thank you.
Stefan Belmont, Google. Pretty amazing work.
Thank you.
So this works for, and this is my first contact with this idea here, but this works for transmit, right? It's
yes.
Passive transmission. Do you guys have any ideas? I mean, if you could crack even a tiny bit of the receive side, that would be absolutely amazing. Are there any tricks that can be played on that side?
We agree 100%, and we're currently working on it, and hopefully you'll hear about some of our techniques soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, hi. Nice talk. Just two questions. One of them is, again, I haven't seen this work before, so how... what's the limitation with 802.11b? I mean, does that mean that the whole network now has to be at B speeds, or what would it take to actually get it to GNN with OFDM and MIMO and whatnot?
Yeah.
Or is that just not going to happen?
So we currently have projects working on getting 802.11g OFDM. It's essentially the same project as our receiving actual Wi-Fi. So hopefully you'll hear about that soon. If we're using 802.11b traffic, it doesn't downgrade the entire network to 802.11b. You end up with mixed mode networks where traffic with a good channel is at 802.11g rates, and then traffic with not as good of a channel or our traffic is at B rates.
But yeah, your channel use is going to go down anyway if you're doing many things at 802.11b, right?
I mean, it depends on what size packet you send.
Okay.
It's essentially you take up the channel based on how large your packet is.
Yes.
And one megabit per second definitely takes up a lot of space.
Yes.
When we move up to two, you can do things like you can shorten the Wi-Fi header and stuff like that. And also our applications that we tend to look at, sensor networks, tend to be very small amounts of data. You're not streaming Netflix, that sort of thing. So in practice, we haven't seen a huge impact.
And just a follow-up question. So the goal, if I understood it, is that the passive device is what eventually could be an IoT platform, right?
Exactly. Yep.
So could you comment, because right now the numbers that you said, 10 to 60 microwatts, are really just for the RF backscatter, right?
Yes. Yep.
So if you think about what an IoT device might be, it'll have a Cortex-M3 or some micro plus some sensing and whatnot. So where do you think you can actually, like once you put on all the other peripheral stuff that makes up an IoT device,
yeah,
will this be the problem or will it be all the other components to make a useful IoT device?
Yeah, in power-limited systems, communication has traditionally been the big bottleneck for power consumption, because sensing has become so ridiculously low power that it's not a problem. And then depending on what kind of computation you want to do, you can always offload that to the cloud. So communication always has been the big bottleneck, and having reduced that, we think that enables a lot of really low power IoT stuff.
So I would just suggest that if you look at, because communication is higher power, but if you duty cycle, it may not be like the energy impact of not even matter.
Yeah, we agree completely. And
yeah,
in our paper, we discuss a little bit about the benefits of duty cycling and how this can enable applications where you couldn't duty cycle, streaming audio, for example, that sort of thing. So there are benefits to going to low power communication, even if you plan on duty cycling.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Ray Lucchese, Silverton Consulting. You kind of showed the ratio of plugged-in devices to passive devices is 1-to-1.
Yeah.
Is there a ratio that you seem to believe works well in this environment? It's obviously not going to be 1-to-1 in
no,
the
it's,
field.
No, it's one plugged-in device to many passive devices, similar to what you would get with a Wi-Fi router and many Wi-Fi clients. So about as much clients as your router of the network
so almost,
you're connecting
almost
to.
Almost at a router level of clients.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
You talk about the CW emitter as being plugged in.
Yeah.
Would it be feasible to be battery operated? I mean, could I make the phone be that effectively?
You could.
How much juice do I need?
Yeah, well, so the reason we had it plugged in is because it's generating a relatively powerful RF signal, which causes battery to drain, which is why we're doing passive Wi-Fi. You can do it on a phone, and to continue plugging more of our papers, we have a paper, it's our paper coming out in SIGCOM, where we talk about doing this from transforming Bluetooth packets into Wi-Fi packets using techniques similar to this. So we can transmit Bluetooth on a phone and then change that into Wi-Fi. So come see our talk at SIGCOM and all your questions will be answered.
Can I throw out one more question?
Sure.
So first of all, it's completely magical, and I can't tell whether you used more Eye of Newt or Toe of Frog to make it work. But one thing about motivation I'd like to understand is, if I've got a plugged-in device, you know, why not do the knuckle dragon naive thing and just have the plugged-in device do some completely proprietary thing talking directly? Why generate a Wi-Fi packet? Why not just send an answer back to the plugged-in device and have it speak Wi-Fi back to wherever you want to go?
Essentially be a bridge, right?
Yeah, why not be a bridge?
Yeah.
So do you get something else?
There's a couple reasons. One is, so we want to use backscatter, right? Because it's so ridiculously low power.
You still could, right?
Yeah, but you would need essentially a full duplex radio, right? Because the plugged-in device is generating a continuous wave. At the same time, it would have to receive your backscatter. So the benefit, that becomes very expensive, right? Full duplex radios have significant cost.
You could do the cycle between transmitting the CW and then listening, right?
No, because the backscatter is happening at the same time as the continuous wave.
Oh, gotcha. So,
you need the continuous
wave. Physically separated is actually...
Exactly. So we went to a bistatic system, which you could conceivably have multiple helpers, and then one's a transmitter, one's a receiver, but you already have a Wi-Fi router. Let's just use that as the receiver.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks. Appreciate it. Great talk. Let's go to the next talk.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bryce. Fantastic.